Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:05 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 3rd, first trading day of the year, and certainly an interesting one. What I find especially interesting over the course of the last year, the number of times when the Nasdaq has had a negative day, a number of the Chinese shares have been among the biggest gainers, and this was even more emphasized in here today because when we look at the worst performers, well, we had Tesla, Lucid, and Rivian, and those are all the big name electric vehicle manufacturers. But when we then think about the constituents of the are the best performers of the H share index in China, well, then it was Li Auto, BYD, and Geely were the biggest gainers. And it was a pretty positive day overall in Hong Kong, with the H share index rising and now pushing up to test the region of the 200-day moving average. And it's looking increasingly likely that it will be able to push up through that level. Now, today was certainly a day of two halves, where we had really quite positive action coming out of most parts of the world in the early part of the day. Then, through most of the day on Wall Street, we had an initial burst of enthusiasm right off the open. Then prices went down, and then subsequently rebounded. And finishing out the day pretty much unchanged. But this is also begging some big questions. And I think some of those questions we're going to be tackling for most of the year. So, while we had a lot of back and forth action in US markets, the move that we had in China was rather impressive. And this is at least some evidence that investors are willing to look through the spike in COVID cases. Now, there are a couple of issues with the short term and the medium term, and then the long term outlook for China that probably need some consideration. Well, the first is that China's death toll from COVID is going to surge over the course of this month. And they're already dealing with crematoriums that can't keep up with the surge in demand for their services. So that's obviously going to be problematic. And there's the prospect of mass graves and we've already seen that China implemented a mobile crematorium system in Wuhan 3 years ago. So we know what that looks like. And investors are willing to look past all of that because they know what happened everywhere else, that when you get the spike, that it generally peters out within 10 weeks, and you get the peak of new infections, and after that, the number of infections tends to fall, or at least, excuse me, to be more accurate, it's the growth rate in infections then falls exceptionally quickly afterwards. So that's why people are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the outlook for a recovery in Chinese assets, because there will be a fiscal push there, and there's already a fiscal push underway, and a lot of the embattled local governments, which have been starved of capital, are being allowed to extend maturities. They're being provided additional funding, and the creditors for defaulted issues are being given more hearings in the court system. So all of that is positive from a liquidity perspective. So that's certainly looking like the potential here that we're going to have China's markets performing reasonably well and potentially outperforming lots of other areas. We can also then think if China is doing well, then regional economies should also be okay. So We're seeing that there's an increasing number of higher reaction lows, and Vietnam would appear to be putting in a higher reaction low. That was a big decline that we had in the fourth quarter and a big rebound in December, and now it's bouncing from that psychological 1,000-point level. Then Singapore is another index which is bouncing from the region of its 200-day moving average and had the big rebound in the fourth quarter and spent most of the last couple of months doing not much of anything at all, and it's been ranging for the better part of a decade. And I guess one of the markets then that did not fire today was Australia, and the ASX was in negative territory. So, still though, in the region of the 200-day moving average. So, then the big question, of course, is going to be, well, how well are these commodity prices going to hold up? And BHP Billiton was in negative territory today and pausing in the region of the upper side of its range. If we look at just another one of those big industrial metal miners like Rio Tinto, coming back into the region of the succession of lower rally highs, it was in positive territory today, and the FTSE 100 was up in really quite emphatic fashion. But we're in an area of previous resistance, so we're certainly going to need to see additional bullish impetus coming through. And if China's economy recovers, well, then that will be beneficial for global demand. Now, what it will also then do is start to put upward pressure on inflation again. And that was also one of the things that we saw in the rest of the world. China has kept inflation under wraps. And a good part of the reason for that is because the entire economy was locked down and there wasn't a lot of consumption and there wasn't a lot of spending. But with COVID ramping higher and more spending, and a lot of people that have been cooped up in their homes for 3 years, there's going to be a lot more spending. And then that's going to put upward pressure on inflation, not just in China, but probably everywhere else too. So I think these are significant events that are likely to continue to put upward pressure on inflation and make the jobs of central banks more difficult in terms of trying to get inflation down towards an approximation of their target. And then we can think about Europe, where the ECB has been contracting the size of its balance sheet in a really dramatic fashion over the course of the last 6 weeks. But the Euro Stoxx index is bouncing now really quite impressively from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And then the Nikkei is just about holding the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, of course, there's been quite a bit of volatility in the Japanese yen, but it is encountering some resistance in the region of 130, but it has broken through the 200-day moving average. So this might be just a brief consolidation. And in just the same way that there was a really consistent sequence of higher major reaction lows, we now have a sequence of really quite consistent lower rally highs. So a sustained move up through 135 is going to be required to question the yen's potential for continued performance. Now, the second section index often leads, and it's now in the region of the 200-day moving average. So it is outperforming the Nikkei by really quite some margin, but in the region of the first area of potential resistance. So this is the decision time for Japanese equities as well. Now, if we then go back and think about China, so we have the short-term issue about dealing with COVID that's going to create the medium-term issue of rising inflation. But then there's the obvious longer-term issue. China's demographics are problematic to begin with. But then you have the hukou system, and The thing that I was thinking about over the weekend is that the way of life for millions of migrant workers is that the elderly stay at home in the countryside to look after the children, and then the parents of those children go to the city to earn money and work in factories. So, as we move towards Chinese New Year and freedom of travel, it's traditional for parents not just to go home to see their own parents, but it's really for those people to go home and see their children. And that's obviously then going to spread COVID out into large rural populations where there aren't the medical facilities and where there are a preponderance of elderly people. So, and living in close familial quarters. So the problem, the potential issue, is that it will accelerate the death rate among that elderly population, which will then deplete the number of people available for child minding, which will then put upward pressure on wages because it will force large numbers of migrant workers to stay at home, or they will upset the hukou system and force those people to bring their children into the city. But they're not allowed to do that now because of the hukou system. So this has the potential to create a really significant social change in China, where it could potentially represent the dismantling of the hukou system, simply because there will not be the store of elderly people to look after children in the hinterland. And that would be a massive urbanization. So that's also potentially beneficial for Chinese property. So, what happens over the course of the next year, and just how the COVID pandemic not just affects the urban population, but the rural population, is going to have a very significant longer term impact on China. So there are lots of moving parts in the global economy right now. But what I found especially interesting today is how strong the dollar was. And it was up by a full point and firming from the upper side of the underlying trading range. And it held the move all the way through the day. So this is the first evidence of support starting to come through after what has been a really quite significant decline over the last 3 months. Now, gold prices today were up in a dynamic manner in early trading, gave up the entire advance during the day, and then recouped about half, and so far holding the breakout to new 6-month highs. So pulling away from the $1,800 area. Now, I anticipate that there will be more volatility, but gold going up on a day where the dollar was really quite firm, these are not normal circumstances. And what I find also especially interesting is how volatility metrics are out of whack. So the VIX index has basically been going sideways for the last month, and it popped on the upside today and then gave up a lot of the advance by the close. But a lot of the option volume is now concentrated in Apple. So Apple's share price is closing pretty much unchanged on the day, or at least up, or well, it's up on the day, but down on the open. And this minus 17 cents does not reflect the reality of the price action. So we've seen at least a little bit of support coming through in one of the most shorted stocks. But one thing that I think is interesting is that Tesla was down over 12% in here today. So rapidly now coming down into test this $100 level. And that was on a miss in terms of deliveries. And also that the demand for these vehicles is waning. And that is despite the fact that they offered some really quite attractive cost cuts right before the new year in order to try and boost some deliveries. So obviously there are troubles in the share, and it's down from 300 to 100 and change in the space of just 4 months. Tesla was far and away the most highly traded option in the market all the way through 2021, and that was something that helped the share to defy gravity and achieve a valuation that was completely out of kilter with their actual earnings. Then Amazon has been the shorting vehicle of choice, so Amazon's share price has accelerated lower over the course of the last quarter. And what this is suggesting is that there's a lot of algorithms trading events in the stock market. And they're trading ex-div dates with calls by betting that dividend increases will be larger than is priced into the market. And then they're also using put options and in huge volumes to bet on companies that don't pay dividends. And of course, Apple is one of those, and the share remains in a downtrend, despite the fact that it is oversold in the short term, could easily rally back up towards $100. But then the challenge is that it's not the only big retailer that looks toppy or that is enduring some downward pressure. So what I found also interesting is that companies that do depend on consumer spending are also rolling over. And Apple is now back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. This is not the first time that the share has been in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And every other time it has bounced and done so in a very emphatic fashion. So this really is the point where if one wants to buy Apple, this is the place. But then we have to also put into some consideration that there was a massive acceleration. And the price went from 50 and change to 187. So we're talking about a really big move in the space of little more than a year and a half. And since then, the price has failed to find support in the region of the 200-day moving average, broke the sequence of higher reaction lows, failed to hold the rally back upwards, and now is breaking down to new reaction lows. So this is looking like a completed type two top formation with right hand extension. And it really does have to find support in the region of that 1,000-day moving average. I don't believe that Apple has a new product that it's going to bring to the market in the next quarter to really ignite additional new buying. And the reality is most people bought new phones in the last 2 years, and they don't need to go out and buy a new one when the range of new features really isn't that convincing. So there's plenty of scope for Apple to pull back further and then to go through an extensive period of ranging. And that could easily take it down through the 1,000-day moving average, and we could be into a lengthy period of ranging. And I think it is particularly relevant that the share, the market cap is now back below 2 trillion. So we've seen a really profound decline in terms of the valuation for the company. When we then think about the oil price, it was down over $3 in here today. So this is a significant downside Q reversal, and still we have this sequence of lower rally highs. And some of the larger companies had done especially well all the way through 2022. ExxonMobil now looks like that it has a lower rally high. It hasn't broken back below the 200-day moving average yet, and we're still more or less in the region of the peaks from back in 2014. But if oil prices continue to trade lower, then that's going to put downward pressure on some of these companies. Now, one might also argue that companies like Shell and Exxon sell more gas than oil, but natural gas prices are coming down rather heavily, and the US natural gas price is closing out the day closer to 4 than 10. So we've had a really profound decline in the sport in the space of about 5 months, and that's on the back of milder weather. To put that into context, before Christmas, we had, and just in terms of Celsius, we had temperatures of minus 11 in Dallas, and I got back from Cancun 36 hours ago, and the temperature was 24 degrees positive Celsius. So that's a swing of over 30 degrees in the space of less than a week. And I think that is that really helps to highlight just how volatile weather can be, but also that the kind of negative temperatures that we had just before Christmas are not the norm for a good swathe of the lower or the southern part of the USA, and they don't last for very long. So natural gas prices are still coming downwards, and natural gas prices in Europe are also continuing to come down. I really find it exceptionally, I just renews my optimism in the ability of developed countries to get the job done when they need to. When we look at how quickly Germany was able to build their import terminal for LNG, because they only started in August and they took their first shipment today. So in less than 5 months, they went from greenfield to completion. And that was done by sheer reliance on necessity. And the bureaucracy and the planning that would normally take years was completely cast aside. And it just goes to show that bureaucracy can be put aside when it has to be. And we might wish that it could get done like this and be done better in the normal course of events. But we afford ourselves the luxury of exhaustive environmental, social, and consultative questions with various groups that are going to be affected. And because there's no urgency, we just let people have their say. But it doesn't mean that from a societal goal that they can't be achieved when they have to be. And I think this is something that was very much in line with why markets were positive in Europe today, because the abiding view of Europe is that it can't possibly get its act together. But what we've seen is that the response to the war in Ukraine really is something that demonstrates that Europe can work together. And I think that's certainly something that's beneficial for the global economy. It's certainly beneficial for markets. And those energy prices are starting to come back down. Now, when we think about the big global picture, well, obviously, there is Russia and China. They want to dominate the global economy, and they're worried about the weaponization of the dollar. And the USA is has been playing fast and loose with the dollar since 2008, and they bailed out the banking sector with other people's money, and that was obviously problematic for a lot of the holders of US dollar reserves. Well, now you have central bank digital currencies proliferating, You have China setting up its own international banking and money flow system and cross currency swaps with a large number of emerging market countries. Well, then you have what it raises the question, what is the USA going to do about it? And the answer would appear to be that they're going to return to supporting the dollar. And that means holding interest rates higher for longer. But of course, then that begs the question, how will the USA be able to fund the deficits? Will there be a willingness to do whatever is necessary to bring spending under control, to manage the unfunded liabilities? So obviously those are big questions, and we don't yet have the answer. That's more of a question for the decade rather than a question for January of 23. But certainly bond yields were negative in here today. And investors are willing to look at the potential that a yield of 3 3/4 is not zero. And there's some wisdom to having a bond waiting. What was also interesting over the weekend was that the BlackRock, and let me see if I can find it. It's the BREIT, Blackstone REIT, was able to get $4 billion of investments from the University of California system. So the Blackstone share price was in positive territory today. I still think, though, that we're still going to have a recession. Nothing has really happened to question that conclusion. But that you don't generally see the worst effects of a recession until the yield curve goes back into positive territory. And right now, the yield curve spread is at negative 62 basis points. So we're not there yet. And we can still have steady action in between when we get the worst of the selling pressure and where we are right now, which is this Goldilocks period, where central banks are trying to combat inflation, but have not yet leaned on the market enough to result in a big surge in unemployment. But that will eventually happen. So what I'm anticipating is we're going to have choppy markets. And there's certainly the potential that we're going to have a bounce in stocks over the course of the next month. And then as we move towards the next Federal Reserve meeting and more inflation data starts to come out, and then that's likely to shape where investors think opportunities will lie. But oil prices coming down suggest that energy prices and energy-related stocks are not going to be the best performing asset in 2023 because they were the best performing assets in 2022 and 2021. Then, if that's not going to be the case, well, insurance companies did well last year. And PayPal was among the best performers in here today. And I do apologize, I'm not typing particularly effectively. So, a Dividend Aristocrat like Chubb has continued to hold this move up to test the region of its highs. Fintech companies generally should do better in a higher interest rate environment, and PayPal was firming from the lows put in the middle of 2022. So there's the potential here that investors will look more for cash flow. They'll be more discerning, and they'll be looking at balance sheets in order to find value. So there's the real potential that what will do well in 2023 will be the value sector. And value relative to growth continues to outperform. So that's likely to also benefit in absolute terms those value companies. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.